Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Four Aces Studios, Four Aces Presents brings to you West Coast Bias.
Following Four Aces production is for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is highly advised.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to this week's episode of your favorite Sunday afternoon sports radio talk show, West Coast Bias. I am Double K, and I'm here, as usual, with Mr. Suave. What's up, fellas? Or what's up, folks?
What's up, man?
I'll say what's up, fellas, but I realize I'm only talking to one person. So, the thing I was going to tell you, and this will tie into kind of the second half of the show there, is that the guy that I was most happy to have today was Drew Brees, as he tied the NFL record for most touchdowns thrown in the game with 7 and got me a season-high fantasy points of 60 points out of my quarterback. So we'll talk more about that later, though.
I could have used that.
You know? All right, so NCAA basketball. You know, normally we would focus on the entire, you know, top 25 if we had – a couple more hosts here with us, with just us. You know, let's go ahead and focus in on that Pac-12. The Pac-12 basketball doesn't work kind of like the football does. Football has the separate divisions now. Basketball is still all one conference. A conference that at this point in time, Dick Vitale, who's become my new buddy, has projected that Cal should win. They have a solid squad coming back. But we're going to start with last year's champs, the Arizona Wildcats. They finished 22nd overall in the nation, 76 points a game, 37 points a game, or 37 boards a game, 45th in the nation, 14 assists, and 49% shot about 49% from the field. They opened the season this year, November 13th against Pacific at home, a game that they should rout. But man, they returned, I believe, a couple of people from last year's team. But I know that they lost at least one or two to the NBA draft. So, Suave, your thoughts on the returning Wildcat squad coming into this season?
Well, they should be a tough team again this year. They're already a preseason number 10. Looking like they could probably do some damage. Expect them to have a fairly decent season. But I also like the fact that Cal has ranked 14th, which is only 4 spots behind them. So, they're gambling that Cal's going to have not just a good season, but also – be in contention for a good spot come NCAA tournament time.
And, yeah, that to me says a lot about what Coach Martin has built over there in Cal. But the Wildcats, like you said, I think they'll be a tough team. They finished last season with 34 wins, 16 in the Pac-12. I do not believe that they won the Pac-12 tournament, but they did win the regular season title. The team that finished just behind them was a team that has just recently come to the Pac-12 in the Utah Utes, who finished with a 26-9 record, 13-5 in the Pac-12. A solid squad. They returned most of their starters from last year. They were 59th overall in points per game. 141st overall in rebounds per game at 34. Definitely an area of concern that they need to work on. But they did average 14 assists per game, and once again, 49% from the field. They opened their season against Southern Utah at home on Friday, November 13th, which will be the kickoff to most of college basketball season this year. So, Suave, your thoughts on the Utes and their chances to return to the tournament again this year?
There's a good chunk of teams in the Pac-12 that ought to get a little bit of love this year, and Utah is one of them. They started to get their consistency back, and they started to win a good number of their games, like you said, 26-9, 13-5 in the conference. So they played very well, and you expect them to be able to continue that trend and have another strong season.
For sure. The experts have them at this point listed as a one and done. They lost to Duke in the Sweet 16 last year, 63-57. They have a good front court. They definitely are a team that, once again, like I said, you're going to want to watch out for. Ever since joining the Pac-12 in 2011, they have progressively gotten better, going from 6 conference wins to 3 to 5 to 9 last year, making the NIT, or 2 years ago, and making the NIT, and 13-5 in the Pac-12 last year and making it to the Sweet 16. So the next team up on our list, as we continue to look at the Pac-12, will be the Oregon Ducks. The Ducks were not necessarily as formidable of a squad as they have been in football in recent years, but that even seems to be over this year. But they did manage to get to the NCAA tournament. They lost to Wisconsin in the round of 32, which would be the second round. They did lose their one of their guards, Jahlil Abdul-Bassett, who averaged 8 points a game, and another guard, Joseph Young, who averaged 20 points a game. This is a team, once again, progressively year by year since 2011, has gotten better and is expected to go to the postseason, make it to the NCAA tournament, and go 2-1 out this year. Suave, your thoughts on the Ducks and their chances at a Pac-12 title this year?
You know, there's a lot of strength at the top of the Pac-12, and Oregon is definitely having a resurgence. It's been a long time since Gary Payton roamed those sidelines, but at the same time, they've been slowly on the uptick, just like Utah. Not necessarily a national power, but definitely moving in the right direction. They were also 13-5 in the conference, just a loss behind Utah at 26-10. They had a good season, and the way their schedule shakes out, it looks like they should have another good season with roughly around the same number of losses. Not necessarily sure how many wins, but I think there'll be a plus or minus 3 losses on their schedule. And so I'm looking at around, 12 to 13 losses or so, which would still keep them in the low 20s in terms of wins. So I'm expecting, looking at their schedule, until they really start hitting that Pac-12 competition, they should start off the season fairly nicely. It looks like they've lined up a good number of cream puffs for the first almost 10 games. So there's a good chance for them to be 9-1, 10-0 before they even face their first Pac-12 opponent.
Yeah, but Cal proved last year you can start out 11-1 and still barely make the and still end up not necessarily making the NCAAs. It's a tough road out there, even if you stack yourself with cream puffs. But the only team I would disagree with you on is that Baylor isn't that much of a cream puff. I think that they'll give Oregon a small challenge. But other than that, yeah, you're pretty much right. Oregon has a solid shot at going 9-0, 10-0 here. UCLA is next up. They finished last season 22-14, 11-7 in the Pac-12. This is a perennial team that I don't want to say forever been good, but it seems like it's been a long time since I can remember that the Bruins were at the bottom of the barrel when it came to the Pac-12. They start out this year against Monmouth, a team that they should easily roll over. Cal Poly Mustangs are next. Pepperdine, UNLV should challenge them. But then they got Cal State Northridge before a December 3rd matchup with Kentucky. This is a team that lost to Gonzaga in the Sweet 16 last year. They lost current Warrior and former forward Kevin Looney, who averaged 11 points a game, and guard Norman Powell, who averaged 16. They returned most of their starters from this year. Once again, 13-5 in 2011, 11-7, 12, 13-5 in 2013, 12-6 in 14, and 11-7 last year, have made the tournament the past three consecutive years. Bryce Alford is the name that you want to watch out for with them. He's a 6'3 guard, 185 pounds. So, Suave, your thoughts on UCLA and their chances of winning a Pac-12 title this year?
So we're a long way removed from the team that was winning consistently in the national title games since the days of Kevin Love, I believe, the last time they were a serious title contender. But it's UCLA. You can never really count them down. At some point, they're going to have a good recruiting class and be able to boost themselves back up, kind of like how Arizona has done over the last handful of years. So I'm expecting a good season from UCLA. You can't keep them down forever. Their history alone, more often than not, will usually keep them getting decent recruiting classes coming in. So they're never down for long, and I expect them to continue this upward trend until they're back in a near prominent role. I think they have a decent shot of winning the Pac-12, although with where they played last year, the confidence that the other schools around them, I think, will be a kind of a hindrance, as well as I think that Arizona might still again be the cream of the crop of the division.
All right. Next up, we'll be taking a look at a very young Stanford Cardinal team that's not even projected to make the playoffs this year or to make any type of postseason tournament after finishing last year 9-9 and actually, I believe, winning the NIT. Stanford loses guard forward Anthony Brown, center Stefan Nastic, and guard Chason Randall. Randall averaged 19 a game, Nastic 13, and Anthony Brown 14. So they're losing a good 42-46 points a game, and they only averaged, 72 a game. So this is going to be a tough season for the Cardinal going into this year. Like I said, they're only projected to go 12. They defeated Miami 66-64 in overtime in that NIT championship game. So despite their strong finish to last season, why does it look like the Stanford Cardinals aren't going to be making noise in the Pac-12 this year?
Well, it's probably because of what they lost.
Fair enough. The next team up. Well, just for those of you that don't know, the Cardinal. Where is it? Cardinal open up their season against Green Bay on Friday the 13th. Of course, just like everybody else. Next up is the Arizona State Sun Devils. The Sun Devils, I do not believe, made the tournament last year. They went to the NIT and lost to Richmond in the second round. Their prediction is seventh in the conference this season. Looking at this team, I can see why. But like I said, they open up their season against Sacramento State. After finishing averaging only 69 points a game, they managed to lose guard Bo Barnes, forward Jonathan Gilling, and forward Shaquille McKissick. But they only lost, in contrast to the last team that lost 40-some-odd points a game, they only lost about 25 out of their 69 points a game. So maybe the players that they have can actually manage to get a little better, and they can make some noise in the Pac-12. They say that they expect them to finish seventh after they finished sixth this year, so they don't expect them to get better. Suave, your thoughts on the Sun Devils?
They kind of been stuck as around close to a 500 team last year, 9-9 in the conference, 18-16 overall. You just can't really tell. You know, a team could go on a streak, but compared to the talent level of the other teams, they're probably going to be close to a 500 team again, which means if they're lucky, they'll be NIT bound. But you never know. A couple of games break a different way, and they might be able to squeeze up and into the tournament or the NIT. So always kind of had a soft spot for Arizona State. They've always been the redheaded stepchild for Arizona. So you can never really tell when they're going to take that transitional jump and get that little bump up or that nudge up. It could be this year or maybe the year after that. So it's going to be interesting for them.
For sure, for sure. Then now moving right along to the next team up, which will be the Oregon State Beavers, a team that finished 17-14, didn't make the postseason last year, was 8-10 in the conference. They start out this year against Northwest Christian. They don't even have ESPN doesn't even have a logo for it. That's how insignificant they are. They start play on September 14th. They open up the season with the Northwest Christian, then Iona, then Rice, then UC Santa Barbara. I don't even expect this team to win even half those games. But looking at a schedule like that, I would most of the time say, hey, yeah, they should finish pretty high up there, and they should start out, like we said, with Oregon, like 9-0, 10-0, but I just don't see this team being that good. So, Suave, your thoughts on the Beavers going into this season?
Yeah, Beavers kind of racked up a tough schedule. Iona has been a halfway decent team. UC Santa Barbara has had some good squads since Steve Nash on their sidelines. Valparaiso has always been halfway decent. Nevada Wolfpack won't be necessarily a laugher. Then they also have Kansas, but Kansas comes to Oregon State. But we can just tell you right now that that's going to be a loss. Unless it's a massive, massive upset on Oregon State's part, which they can do, because any given day, any team can beat any other team, regardless of talent. It all comes down to whether your shots are falling, you're rebounding well, and playing good defense, and the other team has an off night. I mean, that's all it takes, you know, just basically throwing in the kitchen sink and having everything run your way. But I agree with you. I think that looking at who all they're playing, in the first handful of games, first dozen or so games up until they play the Pac-12 tournament games. Around 500, maybe a game or two above 500. They're probably going to take some lumps. Statistically, they haven't necessarily been playing they didn't play all that great last year. In the lower portions in every statistical category that you can think of. So it's going to be real tough for Oregon. They did play better than average defense, but that might only be because they slowed down the pace, and offensively they weren't necessarily trying to put the ball in the bucket 1,000 times a game. So, but they ranked decent defensively and maybe continuing that trend to be able to boost off of that. And if they can get an uptick in the offense, maybe they can have a halfway better than decent season. But I'm still not exactly 100% sold on them, but I do like Gary Payton II. I think he could be a good player for him, and if he's able to take the next step in his game, which isn't necessarily a guarantee, they might be able to make a little bit of noise. But it's going to be tough for the next season or two as they try and progress this team.
All right. Now up next is the team that I've been waiting to talk about, coached by Mr. Quenzo Martin over there in Berkeley, the California Golden Bears, who finished last season only 18-15 and a disappointing 7-11 in the Pac-12, but had a team that finished a 200th overall in points per game and 143rd at only 44% shooting from the field. But yet, despite all of that, they are expected to win the Pac-12 this year by Dick Vitale, expected to finish second by most of the experts, or no worse than second by most of the experts. They opened the season against Rice. This is a team that lost forward Christian Behrens and forward David Kavish only 15 points a game out of the 66 that they had. And they have some good players off the bench last season, players to get better this season. Suave, your thoughts on Cal and where you expect them to land?
Well, it comes down to they can improve on last year. They're rated in the middle of the pack in almost every statistical category outside of rebounds, where they were and they were 14th overall in rebounding in the entire nation, which is kind of something to hang your hat on. Every other statistical category, they pretty much were I'd say the higher end of the middle of the pack, but still might not necessarily be good enough. Want to build off of what they did last year and the season that they had, the start that they had, and they want to see if they can push that even further. They have a couple of tough games here and there, but at the same time, up until they get to the University of Virginia Cavalier game, which is going to be a slobber knocker on the December 22nd, they have a good opportunity to be in that game with one loss, if not undefeated. They do play San Diego State, which is going to also be a tough one, so that's probably where I see their one loss. But if they can beat San Diego State, they'll go on a streak up until I'm not sure St. Mary's is the same team that can hang with Cal this year, this particular year. But if they're able to get the University of Virginia game with that San Diego State game under their belt, they could and should be undefeated. And then they start the Pac-12 play against Colorado, then they got a tough game against Utah, Oregon, Oregon State, Stanford, Arizona State, and it starts to kind of get a little tough from there because the Pac-12 is going to be kind of a murderer's row, if you will. There's not a ton of easy games lined up when you talk about Pac-12 basketball. So it's looking like it's going to be a difficult season for Cal, but I'm going to go with Dick right now. If he thinks that they can come through with the strength of the Pac-12 and still pull out the number two, against Arizona, I'm all for it, and I'm not going to disagree.
Yes, and Suave, you know, that's a valid point. You know, I got to side with Dick Vitale on the fact that he thinks that a lot of these cats from Cal are coming back strong. You know, and so I have to have that faith in him. But there are no easy games in the Pac-12. There is no easy schedule when you have a Pac-12 conference schedule. So just for time reasons, we're going to go on ahead and take a look at the last bottom four teams from the Pac-12 last season. And I want you to tell me which of the four do you think is not going to finish in the bottom four again this year. You got Colorado, Washington, who finished 7-11, 16-18 overall. Washington State, 7-11 in conference, 13-18 overall. Washington, who was 5-13, finished in conference 16-15 overall. USC finished 3-15 in conference and 12-20 overall. Which one of those teams do you think is going to climb their way out of the cellar and possibly into an NIT berth?
I'll give my vote to Colorado. They finished fourth to last. They definitely have more momentum to build off of. I think Washington State is a close second behind that team. I don't see USC or Washington, even though they used to be pretty good powers in the Pac conference. I don't see them pulling themselves out of the cellar. Not this year, not until we see, that season by season growth from those two teams. USC definitely hasn't been a power team in quite some time. They need a strong recruiting class, which is tough when you're up against UCLA, who's just right across the way in Los Angeles. So, I'm going to go with Colorado. They've been playing consistent. 7-11 doesn't sound good, but they were 16-18, which is right borderline. They tied conference record-wise with California, but they were only three losses worse and two wins under. So they have a chance, a couple of the games swing their way. They have a strong start to the season. Like I say, you know, outside of one or two or three teams, the Pac conference is going to be murderer's row. But Colorado could definitely win a couple more games, and, you know, hell, just winning two more games would put them in the upper half or the bottom half, and that's just two wins. So it's going to be that even.
All right, and that'll do it for our NCAA talk for this week. I'm definitely inclined to agree with Suave on that pick as to who will climb out of the cellar. You're listening to your favorite Sunday afternoon radio show, West Coast Bias, right here on the 4Aces Network, blogtalkradio.com. Good afternoon, folks. If you're listening to me, that means you're already listening to one of the plethora of amazing shows here on the 4Aces Network. But I'm here to tell you about yet another one. Every other Monday night, we have a show around here called Now Versus Then, hosted by Robin Baxter, better known as B, who brings you all those great topics from the music industry, not to mention great music independence to current stars to everything in between. So be sure to listen in to Now vs. Then. That's Monday nights, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 11 Eastern, right here on Blog Talk Radio, 4H's Presents. All right, Suave, it's your turn to give them your take on that situation.
All right, so I thought I was going to talk about the Oakland A's and Lou Wolf being the worst owner in all of professional sports. Hell, the worst owner in sports out in the world is what I would call them. And, you know, waiting on him to build the stadium that he should have built, you know, when he bought the team instead of trying to move them to any other city just to so he could own the land and get all the parking revenue and this and that, you know. So I'm still waiting on that. But this week, something else kind of bit my bonnet. I want to talk about the college playoff. You know, they say it's going to take years for them to expand it. I think that that is a travesty. Honestly, if you've been listening to the show, you know that I not only want 8 teams or 12 teams or 16, I want 24 teams. I want March Madness to represent in football as well as it does in basketball. March Madness. Why do they call it March Madness? Because it takes almost a month to get through all 68 or however many teams down to the final two. Well, in football, and looking at the rankings this year, you have so many teams with one loss and two losses sprinkled throughout all these undefeated teams in the rankings. And yet again, because they're only doing a 14 playoff, there's a very good chance that somebody who is undefeated is left out of a chance to play for a national title. That's insane. That, to me, is just insanity. We've got to get away from all the big bowls, basically the Rose Bowl, the Fiesta, and the other bowls, hoarding the national title game action. These other games, you know, the Chick-fil-A and all those other bowls, you know, the Holiday Bowl, the Alamo Bowl, and all those bowls should actually mean something. So I think it's time for the NCAA to make a big jump, not just go to 8 teams, not just go to 12, go to 24. If you don't go to 24, what's the point of ranking 1 through 25 in the polls? It's been like that for decades. They have ranked the top 25 teams for decades. My question to you, the listener, why? If you're only going to let two teams battle over the title, why does it matter the ranking for the other, you know, 3 through 25? And now that they're doing the four-game playoff, why does it matter teams 5 through 25 up until the point they're actually in the conversation to be in the top four? I mean, it just makes no sense to me. You have a month worth of bowl games that nobody watches. Why not make those games important? Why not make those bowl games important? You know, 24 teams sounds like a lot until you think about NCAA basketball, which allows 68 teams into their final tournament. 68. And then another handful of those teams goes to the secondary tournament, the NIT. It has never made sense to me that the playoffs in college football even before the playoffs, when it was just two teams, never made sense. Somebody that was deserving for an opportunity and could beat both teams that were in the bowl game were always left out. And now you've got the same problem happening again. You've got multiple undefeated teams sprinkled all throughout the top 25. And, I mean, we're 8 games into the college season. They only play, you know, 10, 11 games all season, maybe 12. We're already two-thirds, three-fourths of into this college football season, and we've got undefeated sprinkled all up and down the tournament, so or the top 25. So why don't we allow all these teams an opportunity to fight for a title? I just don't understand why the NCAA isn't already on this boat. I mean, yeah, once you look past the top 24, that's only 12 games. That's only 12 games. And really, to start the tournament. And, you know, when you look at the NCAA. They play so many games in basketball. The same thing should apply to football. I mean, there's always the one thing they talk about when kids go on and are selected to the NFL is hitting that rookie wall, because you play so many more games, especially if you end up on a playoff team, than you do when you were in college. But by doing a bigger bracket, you would add more games for certain teams, which would benefit the kids that are going in, because more often than not, the teams that are going further in the playoffs are the teams that are going to have the most kids getting drafted. So it only makes sense to elongate the season for these kids. You know, the four-game playoff, it's antiquated, and it just came out. I mean, it shouldn't. I don't understand why they didn't start with eight. But honestly, for every conference to be represented, for every conference champion to be truly represented, and other teams in that conference who can get hot late in the season, but maybe they lost the game early, or a game or two games here or there that maybe they shouldn't have lost, but they did, and then they got hot at the end of the season. Well, now they're out of it. I mean, think of this. You have a tournament right now, and if we went with the way I'm thinking, 24 teams, you could have a Mississippi State play damn good all season, a Toledo undefeated that's not even going to sniff the top playoff spot. You got Houston undefeated, not going to sniff the top playoff spot. You got number 17, Florida State, 7-1. They were just in there the last couple of years with Jameis Winston, but they're not even going to sniff it because they got one loss. Let's give these teams another opportunity. Right above them, you got Michigan with the Harbaugh saga. He's done a great job at Michigan, but they're out of it because of two losses. You got undefeated Memphis right above them. They've had a great season. They won't catch a sniff and be able to play for the title. Then you've got other teams. You got Oklahoma State, not going to sniff a title. Iowa, undefeated, not going to sniff a title. And then just looking at the top couple of teams, you've got six teams in the top six that are all undefeated. Six for four spots. Now, it's true, Ohio State and Michigan State, they will play each other, so one of these teams will be catching a loss. So that'll leave five teams with an opportunity to be undefeated at the end of the year. It just makes no sense to have such a small playoff for such a monumental sport. I mean, NCAA football is huge, but then again, so is March Madness. So let's have another style of March Madness, and we can call it December Madness or December something. They can figure out some kind of awesome tagline through the PR people to come out, because, I mean, let's be real. When football season ends for the NCAA tournament or the NCAA in football, it's still a month or over a month worth of games. A month worth of games that nobody watches. Unless it's your alma mater or you were partial to that team because you grew up in the area, does anybody watch any of the lower bowls? But if we made it a bracketed playoff where it was 24 teams, well, then two-thirds of those games, now they really mean something. Now more people will get invested, more people will watch. They'll be looking for upsets, just like March Madness. People are waiting for that first time where one gets knocked off by a 14 or the 7 versus 8, the 3 versus 12 and all that. So, I mean, it's time for NCAA football to take its foot out of its ass and open up the playoffs past four teams. The top 25 teams normally only have two. Maybe you got a rare top 25 team that's played so many tough teams that when they have three losses and they're in the top 25 because they had three tight losses. But let's be honest, the top 25 consistently has a bunch of teams that have one, two, or are even undefeated but didn't play a tough enough schedule in the eyes of a committee. So let's open up the playoffs. Let's stop with the bullshit. I shouldn't have to wait 20 years for a full, more reasonable playoff. I shouldn't be stuck with four games for a decade, four teams for a decade. That is asinine. Push it out there. Crunch the numbers. You've got a million other bowls out there that you let sponsors just rip apart and plaster their name on. Well, let's make them count for something other than the money that's going into the NCAA coffers. That's been my minute.
What's good with it, Planet Earth? And you are listening to NVT West, where the West Coast music lives. This is The Saint, and I want to go ahead and tell you about the original Now Versus Then, where Generation X meets Generation X, hosted by two wonderful hosts every other Monday. On one Monday, you got Robin Baxter, poetically known as B, hosting. And then on the other Monday, you have the one and only Mother Metaphor. That's every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And y'all, just to let you know, once again, it's still from Generation X from Generation Next.
All right, guys, and just to give you a reminder, this upcoming week we will be having the same as usual Raw Impact Unleashed on Thursday, Double K's Classroom, where I will personally be discussing the NCAA basketball season and football season as well as some NFL action like we are about to discuss right now. As well, I'll have our Artist of the Week. You never know who it might be, so you definitely want to tune in. All right, other than that, listen to West Coast Bias again next Sunday. Same bad time, same bad channel, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Four Aces Network. Now to get back to that football. So we'll start with Thursday night's game, a game that a lot of people thought was going to be close, including myself. It turned out to be a blowout, a 36-7 blowout to be exact, by the Patriots over the Miami Dolphins. The Pats have a solid squad this year. I believe this takes them to 7-0 as they continue to beat up on the rest of the NFL and punish them for the Deflategate scandal. Suave, your thoughts on the Patriots knocking off Miami 36-7 on Thursday night?
Well, as we expected, the Dolphins have been playing better, but they're still nowhere from where they were projected to be to start the season. They're still, I mean, I'm going to be honest, because of the coaching change, they're now in a rebuilding process. They thought that they were an Ndamukong Suh away from being a division contender, and that pretty much went out the window. They've been having a rough season. They sit at 3-4. It's going to be rough for them. The Patriots, they've been playing well. The offense is fairly clicking. The defense is jumped up in spurts. And, you know, it's a good thing they haven't necessarily been playing a ton of playoff teams throughout this run so far. So I wouldn't exactly be getting super thrilled if I were a Pats fan. But at the same time, shout out to my pops. He's in love with the 7-0. And he's in love with them being 4-0 at home. So, you know, I expect them to be a playoff team. I think there's no way, no ifs, ands, or buts about the Pats being a playoff team. They'll definitely be getting in there as division champs. The Dolphins, on the other hand, look like they might be a year or two away. You know, they are really banking on Tannehill taking the next step and being more consistent. And as a unit, they really haven't seen that. You add into all the money that they spent this last offseason, and I'm not sure even with the money that they have coming in, which is a fairly substantial amount of capital still because of some people that they released just this year, I'm not sure exactly what they're going to be able to do. I believe Cameron Wade got injured. I think he ruptured an Achilles, if I'm not mistaken. So that's definitely going to hurt the defense. That wasn't really stopping anybody anyway. So Dolphins are in a tough boat.
Swap?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Oh, one sec. All right, next up is the game that took place early this morning from London. If you were awake to watch it at 6:30 this morning or 7:30, 5:30, I don't know what it was, time change bullshit. Kansas City managed to – maybe Kansas City needs to play more games outside of the U.S. because they stomped all over Detroit 45-10. Made Alex Smith look like a solid QB, getting 28 fantasy points, leading everybody. Chadwick Rest scores a couple of touchdowns, finishes with 18 fantasy points. Hell, even the defense had 15 fantasy points. Alex Smith threw for only 149 yards and two touchdowns. West did a lot of the work along with DeAndre Thomas as well on the ground. Both had touchdowns. Travis Kelce, his primary target, along with Geraldine Macklin, both had touchdowns. So, Suave, your thoughts on Kansas City destroying Detroit out there in London?
Well, I'll admit, I was awake. I woke up early, especially because of the time change. I was up early, and I could have turned this game on. But let's be honest, the Lions are having a terrible season. I expect them to fight for the number one overall pick this year. They have no running game. The defense took a hit when they let Ndamukong Suh go. They've been making mistakes right and left in terms of bringing in talent and in pre-agency and in the draft. They've been making boneheaded moves with their own players. I kind of feel bad for Calvin Johnson. He's still, in my eyes, the best receiver in the game, even though he doesn't put up the numbers that we're used to from Megatron. But if you put him on a better team, I think he would get right back to being the Megatron of old. Matt Stafford is kind of overwhelmed. He doesn't have much to throw to. There's Eric Ebron, and there's Megatron. And, you know, you can toss in Golden Tate. I like him. I got a soft spot for Golden Tate. I like his attitude and his moxie. But they have no running game. So if you clamp down on the receivers and you force pressure up the gut, they're not going to beat you. I mean, that's really been the modus operandi all season. And if the Chiefs had played the Lions 8 times this season, they'd probably be 7-1, to be honest, instead of looking at a 3-5 record. When you make the Chiefs, who have had a pretty down year so far, look like world beaters, you know you're a bad team. When you let Alex Smith throw a touchdown to a wide receiver, which is a rarity for Alex Smith the last couple of seasons, you know you're a bad team. So the Lions are in trouble. I feel bad for Lions fans because it seemed like they were right on the brink just a few short years ago. And it just shows you in the NFL how quickly ties can turn. And the same goes for the Chiefs as well. They were just a very good team when Alex Smith first got there, and injuries and you know, bonehead maneuvers, I'll say, like letting their center go away to a divisional rival, are things that you just can't do in Kansas City. But, you know, Kansas City came out today. They played the Lions. They blew them out. There were, you know, I turned on my Facebook. It was like, man, is anybody watching this game? It's already over. I was like, well, there's no point in me turning it on. So Lions stink. The Chiefs are bad, but they don't stink as bad. And against the Lions, that's how bad the Lions are. It can make a bad Chiefs team look like a team from 3 years ago.
All right. So, jumping over to this morning's later games, I guess you would call them the midday games, considering that first game takes place so early in the morning. You got Minnesota taking on Chicago, getting the last-second victory with a 40-yard touchdown from Teddy Bridgewater to Stephon Diggs, the new hot thing in wide receiving in the NFL this year. They say he's like the OBJ for this season. So, but we'll see when the season's over if he wins Rookie of the Year. But Swab, your thoughts on them boys in Minnesota who are now 5-2, beating up on the Chicago Bears?
When it comes to Rookie of the Year, I don't think there's any way he's going to beat out Amari Cooper for it, but he's definitely going to get himself into the talk. It really comes down to good drafting, and then,
well,
the person that gets drafted.
Thing, Steve, remember, there's an NFC and there's an AFC Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
And they play in two different conferences, so Stephon could still get the NFC while Amari Cooper gets the AFC.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that, you know, yeah, that's true. I can't even argue that. But the Bears have had a tough season. They've been gaming a lot of games. They've been up to the challenge and have fallen just short. It's really surprising to be able to say that. They're definitely a different beast than the Lions team, which just stink overall, even though they've got some weapons. Jay Cutler is up and down, but he is enough to move the chains. But they've also made some boneheaded moves, like letting go of Brandon Marshall just because they have an Alshon Jeffrey who was hurt to start the season. The defense is definitely not the defense that helped get them to the Super Bowl so many years ago. The Vikings are a team on the way up. They're 5-2. They're playing halfway decent. Bridgewater doesn't turn the ball over and throws short passes at a high percentage. And Stephon Diggs has stepped up, become a very reliable threat for them. So it looks like the Bridgewater to Diggs combo is going to work, as well as however long Adrian Peterson can stay relatively young with the fountain of youth at his tender age for a running back. So as long as they have Adrian Peterson, I expect them to be a fully functional team. They'll try and continue to build the defense so that way they can augment once Adrian Peterson leaves the game, because then they'll fall into what the Lions have fallen into unless they have a backup who's ready to step up and become the feature back in Minnesota. The Bears have a lot of issues. They've got some great weapons, but the defense is garbage. They tried to bolster some moves and make some moves on the defensive side of the ball, but most of them, outside of a good draft pick in the corner that they picked up, I believe his name is Fuller, he's a good pick. They tried to pilfer the Raiders for Lamar Houston, and after he got injured last year, he just wasn't the same type of a pressing defender. So this is a game that two teams are going in different directions. Vikings are currently on the way up, or however long Adrian Peterson keeps lacing up those cleats, and the Bears are in search of an identity and more weapons on both sides of the ball to try and become a decent team.
All right, now we'll skip on over there to Houston. Take a look at that Texans 20-6 win over the Tennessee Titans. To be honest with you, I don't know which team is truly more pathetic between these two, but today it looked like it was the Titans. Suave, your thoughts on the Texans' dominant victory over the Tennessee Titans?
Well, the Texans got one. They let go of Ryan Mallett, who, you know, we've all been late to work. You know, there's not anybody in any group of friends, in any person, group on this damn planet who hasn't been late to work a time or two. But having said that, if our job was to make millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars, best believe we'd probably be to work early every day for as long as we were making that good money. So I put Ryan Mallett's career, which is really kind of, you know, he had an opportunity to be a starter, which is a rarity. There's only 32 starter jobs in the NFL, and he was blessed to get one having sat behind Tom Brady. So a lot of teams were kind of vying for him, and the Texans made the move to pick him up, and he scuttled it. Now you got Hoyer out there, who's been up and down throughout his career, kind of reminds me of a poor man, Fitzpatrick, who's over there from New York, who got injured today. He comes in and he plays halfway decent. Texans really just need consistency. If this Texans offense was the same from a couple years ago, the defense, you know, it's the same problem some of these teams go through, just like the Raiders. It doesn't matter how good your defense is. If your offense can't produce points and can't sustain long drives, you're going to have bad games for your from your defense because they're on the field far too long. The Titans looked good at the start of the season, but then again, I think that came down to the fact that they were playing another bad team. And also add into that, they had so many weeks to prepare for that first game versus just having a week or less to prepare for every game after that. So it looks like that's finally catching up to Tennessee. The Texans aren't a good team. They definitely have some great pieces. They have, I'm still going to say it, J.J. Watt's the best defensive lineman in the game today, even though he isn't statistically this year getting the same number of sacks or whatnot and quarterback pressures, but I think that's also due to the fact that he's being keyed on more and he's on the field a hell of a lot more. So he's starting to wear down and isn't having a chance to be as effective. So this is a game versus two bad teams. The Titans are obviously worse, and they're going to challenge for that number one overall pick. So it's definitely looking like it's going to be Lions, Titans, and Bears for the top three picks this year.
Very well set up and very well said. Let's see. Next over, we find them birds in Baltimore who managed to get their second win in the season, squeezing out one over Phillip Rivers and them boys in San Diego at home. Steve Smith Sr. went for 8 fantasy points. Justin Tucker, the kicker, including the game winner, went for 20, and Joe Flacco went for 22. Suave, your thoughts on Baltimore getting their second victory?
Well, the Ravens remind me of Chicago. They made some head-scratching moves, but the thing that they have that Chicago doesn't is the plethora of injuries that they've had happen to them this year, because they've consistently been in just about every game, and it's been a rarity, if at all, that they've been blown out all season. So this is definitely a game that they can build off of. They're not going anywhere, but it's a game they can build off of. They'll definitely be in the top 5, if not top 7 draft picks this season, which should help them in the future because Ozzie Newsome is one of the best GMs in all of football. So a high pick should definitely help propel or push them back up into relevance, as well as getting back all the injured players that they have. I believe they're starting their number three, number four, and number five, if not number four, five, and six receivers in the 1-2-3 spots. So they've just been hurt all over the board. Justin Forsett is kind of being getting keyed on after he had kind of a semi-breakout year last year. Flacco, he's still an elite quarterback, but he doesn't really have a ton to work with. And that's not necessarily due to his contract, more so the fact that the injuries have just kind of bogged them down, and the defense definitely isn't what it was. But this is a win that's definitely going to make them feel good. It definitely makes me feel good because I was, you know, even though Phillip Rivers is on my fantasy team, if he can go ahead and get my points and take the loss, I'm always a happy camper. So this is a battle. Hey, both teams end up at 2-6. They're both going to be in the top 10 when it comes draft time. I don't see either of these teams going on a streak, per se. So it's going to be very interesting seeing where they finish at the end of the year in terms of where they're going to be ranked in the draft. But the Ravens have consistently been a better team than the Chargers, and, again, it showed today.
All right, next up we have Arizona, who had to make a comeback after being down 20-7 to the Cleveland Browns and managed to pull off the 34-20 victory behind 36 fantasy points from Carson Palmer and very little damage from Chris Johnson. So, Suav, your thoughts on Arizona getting a 5-2, beating Cleveland in the dog pound?
Cleveland reminds me of they're so close. And I felt bad for Browns fans for the better part of almost two decades. You lose their team, and their team leaves them and goes to Baltimore. The city fights for the name. They're able to keep it, and the owner gives up the name, and he calls himself the Ravens. And then they proceed to win two Super Bowls. And let's be honest, Browns teams won both of those Super Bowls. I don't care what anybody says. You can call them Ravens all you want, but Browns teams won those Super Bowls. So after getting gypped out of two Super Bowls, the Browns are on the edge of being a halfway decent team again. They're right at the line, but they just keep falling short. This week, you're facing a Cardinal team that's on a roll. They're 5-2. They're looking good. And you've got them at halftime 20-10. Problem with the Browns, same problem for years for the Raiders. You can't finish the game. You get bogged down, the other team makes adjustments, next thing you know things aren't working, and you let a higher power offense make a couple of drives, and next thing you know, it looks like you got blown out when you actually had the lead at halftime. So I feel bad for Cleveland. They're right on the verge. I think another year or two, and they will be a much more competitive team, if not a on the edge of being a playoff team. Arizona looks like they could be a Super Bowl contender. They need more consistency. They can't allow teams to really hold them down or hold themselves down. Carson Palmer has to play a little bit more consistent and not give in to making bad decisions, which does happen from time to time, even though he is an elite quarterback. If Arizona can play four quarters every game, especially at the end of the season, they are definitely a team with the offense and just enough defense to be able to win a Super Bowl. So the Cardinals look like a for surefire playoff team, and the Browns look like a team that is right on the cusp of turning the page. I mean, I wouldn't just flip the record and say, oh, well, in a couple of years they'll be 6-2. But they could be 4-3, 5-3, something like that, you know, a little bit better just in the playoff talk. So it is going to be interesting for them moving forward. I'm really kind of rooting for the Browns. And don't get it twisted. Those Ravens Super Bowls really belong in Cleveland.
All right. So San Francisco, we've beaten that dead horse for weeks now. They lose again 27-6 to the Rams. So we're going ahead and jump over to Oakland, where Raiders are handling their business up 34-20 over the Jets right now. The Jets have managed to – it was 34-13, I believe, going into the fourth quarter. So the Jets have tried to make this into a closer game. But it looks like the Raiders are on their way to a 4-3 record, first time over 500 in a while. So, Suav, your thoughts on that Raider Nation getting that big win at home over the Jets?
Oh, I see how you're going to do me. You're just going to skip over the game. I was all juiced when I first turned it on, and the Niners is up 3-0, and I'm like, oh, there we go. Let's go, momentum. And then I come back half an hour later, and they're down, and they never call back out. So, but it's okay. It's okay. Moving on to this Raiders-Jets game. Fitzpatrick got hurt. The Raiders have been hot 2 weeks in a row. They're making plays. Charles Woodson got a 65th pick of his career, which I'm pretty sure Charles Woodson, without a doubt, is going to be a Hall of Famer. And even though he spent a little under half of his career in Green Bay, and that was the place he got his ring from, I'm pretty sure he's going to go into the Hall of Fame as a Raider, which is awesome. So the Raiders are playing great. They're not 100% consistent on both sides of the ball like I'd like to see, but I am happy that the offense isn't letting the gas off the pedal. After halftime, they're still trying to keep into it, still trying to keep momentum building. The defense has been good in spurts. They were killer in the first half, holding the Jets to 2 field goals in each quarter, which was awesome. And then they allow the changing quarterback to kind of give them a little boost, and the Raiders haven't really been able to continue to shut down Geno Smith, which is impressive because Geno Smith, I didn't have high hopes for him to start the season, but now with him coming in off the bench, there's a chance he might be the starter come next week, depending on what happens with Fitzpatrick. And if he's able to consistently play like he has in the second half of this game, there's a good chance he might not give up that starter position. So it's going to be real interesting moving forward for the Jets. But the Jets are still 4-2. They're still fighting for an opportunity, which I think will definitely bolster how Geno Smith plays. The Jets will be 4-3 after this game. The Raiders will be 4-3 as well. Raiders are trending in the right position. They're trending upwards. The offense is playing good. The defense has been above serviceable. I wouldn't say they've been playing good. They start games well, but they haven't been able to shut teams down and really finish teams off. You know, last week against the Chargers, they gave up a bunch of garbage touchdowns and garbage yardage. And, yeah, they still held on for the win, but you want a complete victory. You want to play all four quarters. You don't want to let a team have any type of momentum or feel like they did better. So they're playing better this week than they did last week in that regard. So it's going to be interesting moving forward for the Raiders. I think the schedule lines up fairly nice for them outside of the divisional opponents. And things are looking good. Had they not coughed up the games to Chicago and Denver that were very winnable games for them, we could be talking about a team that's sitting here at 7-1. I mean, there's no way in saying they lost that game to Cincy, so that's not even an iffy game. But the Chicago and the Denver game, which gave them their second and third losses, those are definitely winnable games that they coughed up at the back end of the game. So this is definitely a team turning in the right direction, and as they continue to grow and gain that consistency, I think that they'll start finishing off those games where they're in at the end of the game with an opportunity to win instead of coughing them up, and it could make all the difference in the world. I mean, two you take those two losses and stick them on, you're talking about a Raiders team that's 5-1 and about to be 6-1, which would be incredible. So as they continue to learn and progress in the right direction, and it's nice to see players like Crabtree, Murray, Cooper, and Andre Holmes, you've got to give him some love. He's had a couple of touchdowns last few games, but he's becoming a nice third option target for touchdowns for Derek Carr. And Derek Carr, he just got rated by, I forget if it was ESPN or some sports thing about, you know, he just now cracked the top 10 for quarterbacks in the league. I'm sorry, he's a little bit better than that. I saw some of the quarterbacks on that list, and they're on that list because of what they've done in the past, not what they're doing this season. And consistently, if I'm not mistaken, this gives Derek Carr, after this game, once it's over, 15 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. That's some Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady-type stuff. That's their type of stats. I mean, outside of the yardage, which is decent. Today he got 333 on only 35 attempts, 23 completions. Derek Carr is slowly and surely moving up into elite status. And I think by come next year, I think he will be solidly as an elite quarterback in the NFL, especially with how good Reggie has put weapons around him. And I got to give my boy Kev credit. You were right, and I was wrong. Amari Cooper is the more all-around better receiver than Kevin White and appears to be the all-better-around pick than Leonard Williams, who I wanted for the Raiders to help on the defensive side of the ball. But at the same time, having said that, I didn't know we were going to get Alvin Smith. If I knew at the beginning we were going to get Alvin Smith, I might have been on the Cooper bandwagon myself. But I got to give you credit for making that pick because it's obviously he's going to be Rookie of the Year. almost by a landslide as long as he stays healthy. So give him up on that one.
Well, all I can say is this. The year you're seeing out of Michael Crabtree doesn't happen if y'all don't take Amari Cooper. I'm sorry. He's been opened up so much by the fact that Amari Cooper is the true threat that he is, that it's allowed Crabtree to play to the potential that he was supposed to have for a good long while, but never showed during his time in San Francisco. But at the end of the day, guys, this is all we had time for. We'll give real quick picks. I'll say it like this. Sunday night, I got got Green Bay squeaking out a victory over Denver, and I got Carolina squeaking out a victory over Indianapolis and Andrew Luck. But Andrew Luck is going to go off. Why? Because I need him to go off. Suave, your thoughts on those two games. Give your predictions, and then we'll wrap it up.
Packers are going to crush the Broncos. I think Peyton Manning, he's starting – the age is really starting to show. The mind is still the same. He's still a top-notch elite quarterback in his head, but his arm can't keep up. So I think this is going to be a blowout. I expect the Packers to win by 2 touchdowns. Then for the Colts and Panthers, I think the Panthers are going to squish the Colts, especially with the fact that the Panthers' defense is playing so good. And Andrew Luck tried to come back to save this season playing with broken ribs, which I'm sorry, that's a mistake. You know, broken ribs is nothing to play with. Sit Andrew Luck, allow him to get fully healthy, write this season off, get a better draft pick, put more talent around him, really pilfer the free agency for better linemen to get him protection. Don't waste this year, which is already wasted, on trying to get Andrew Luck to get you into the playoffs when, yeah, I know you sold the farm and you got Andre Johnson and Frank Gore. They're not any spring chickens, but forget them. Andrew Luck is the real team here. And if you allow Andrew Luck to get hurt or re-injure those broken ribs that he's been playing with and looking kind of awful with, that would be a huge mistake, especially against the Panthers defense that can get pressure on him. And the Panthers are going to win this game. I don't see any way that the Colts really pull this out unless the Panthers come out terribly sloppy and slow. So I think Panthers win this game, and I've lost a little bit of respect for the Colts for allowing Andrew Luck, who is their franchise, to come back early when they could have just coughed up a couple of wins, which would have helped their draft position to help his ass next year. You know, so I think Panthers beat the Broncos by 2 scores, and I think the Panthers beat the Colts probably by about the same.
I'll say it like this. I would say, especially after last week watching what Andrew Luck did with them 2 broken ribs late in that game against New Orleans, bringing them almost wholly back to beat New Orleans last week, I would say that having Andrew Luck is definitely better than whatever your next option is. And there are ways that they can protect him. Frank Gore was always known and still known as one of the top blocking running backs in the NFL. So you just hold Frank Gore back more and don't have him or have him out there on outlet passes to give Andrew Luck the time to be able to get the ball to him. But the key thing about it is that the Colts are in the same position that they were with Peyton Manning. They cannot afford to not – if Andrew Luck can play, they cannot afford to not have him play. It not only stops their chances at a playoff spot, but it also just stops their chances of looking like a legit football team out there. So at the end of the day, I see where you're coming from, but I have to agree with the decision that Indy made, because there is no other decision to be made, because there is not a single team on this planet that competitively is going to go, especially at this point in the season when teams have come back from worse records to not only make the playoffs but win Super Bowls. There's not a single team on the board that's going to turn around and sit their quarterback and give up on a season the same way the 49ers won't, the same way the Colts won't. There's not a team out there that'll do it. You're going to play every game looking to get the win, and if you don't get it, you don't get it. And if you do get it, you do. But you're going to play every game looking for the win, and you're going to put the players that give you the best opportunity to get that win out there. Anything less, and you shouldn't have a job as a head coach. I can agree that, yeah, what you would want as a fan is for your team to lose more so that they can get the higher draft pick. But as far as competitiveness on the field and as a head coach, no, that's some shit that'll cost you your job. I don't care if you are consider yourself looking towards the future. That's some shit that'll cost you your job. This is a win-now league, and these head coaches need to win now regardless. And if the players are willing to go, they got to let them go. But that'll do it for us this week, guys. We'll come back with more hot talk next week. Next week we should have O'Malley back. Maybe the dual tune in and see. This has been Double K and Mr. Suave. Suave, any last words for him?
NCAA, get off your ass, make the playoffs 24 teams. There's a 25-team ranking for a reason. Let's actually use it like they do in basketball.
All right. That's been it for us here at West Coast Bias. You guys have a great day. Happy November to you, and hope you had a happy Halloween. We'll catch y'all next week.